Alright. We're continuing on in Shoftim, Perek Zayin, Chapter 7. We were in the middle of the discussion last week of the downsizing of Sidon's army that he would be using against Midian. At the beginning of Perek Zayin, in Pasuk Beis, Hashem tells Sidon, your numbers are too great, they're going to take the credit for themselves, and we have to downsize a little bit, purge some of the members of your force. And we saw there were two different stages of this. First, in Pasuk Gimel, Hashem commands Sidon, Kira na ba'aznei ha'am lemar, call into the ears of the people of the nation, saying, Mi yare v'chared yashov v'itzvar mehara gilad, whoever is yare v'chared, fearful and trembling, afraid to go to war, he should return, and yitzvar mehara gilad, we understood that to mean get up in the morning, and leave. And then there we have the pasuk describes that 22,000 people left, leaving 10,000 remaining. It was originally a force of 32,000, 22,000 left at this point, and now there were 10,000 remaining. And then we are in Perek Zayin, pasuk Gimel. So moving on to Pasuk Dalet. In Pasuk Dalet is the second stage of the downsize, and there Hashem says, "Vayomer Hashem al Gidon, Od Ha'am Rav." Then the nation is still too large. Haredo Sam El Amayim, bring them to the water. And I'll refine it a little bit more. I will separate out the impurities. We'll refine this army a little bit more. And it will be that the one who I say, he'll go with you, so he'll go with you. And whoever I say, this guy's not going with you, then he will not go. I saw that the brought down from the Kliyakar, that he explains that this was also a way of reassuring Gidon that he wasn't losing anyone in this. He reads the pasuk that, and the ones who I say Vayasher Omar Elecha Zeilech Nitzach, the one who I say that he's going to go with you, who Yehilech Nitzach, he's one of the people that indeed would go with you, as in he. The ones who I say are not going to go with you, it's not just that I'm telling you, you know, that you should leave them behind, but they're not going to go with you anyways. And these are the people who would desert you on the way. The ones who I say they should go with you, they're the ones who will go with you if you continue. And the ones who I say shouldn't go with you, they're the ones who anyways aren't going to go with you. And then we have the episode that we read last week, that he brings them to the water, and there are those who crouch down and drink directly from the stream. There are others who bring the water to their mouths, and it seems the simple understanding of the psukim is that the ones who bent down, those are the ones that were purged, that they were asked to leave, and that's either because crouching down was an indication that they were used to serving Avodah Zarah, or it was a physical weakness that if they needed to drink a lot of water at once, or bow on their knees to drink, so it was a sign of physical weakness, those were the people that were asked to leave. And those who brought the water to their mouths, either that was a sign that they weren't used to bowing to Avodah Zarah, or that was a sign that they were stronger, healthier, more fit, and more civilized, less quick to bend to desires, And those are the ones that were chosen to will be chosen to go with him. That's a simple approach, I think. There is an approach to these psukim. We'll just point out that in Pasuk Hey, in Pasuk reads, "Vayored es ha'am el ha'mayim," and he brought the nation down to the water. "Vayomer Hashem el Gidon," and Hashem said to Gidon, "Kol asher yolok bilshono min ha'mayim, kasher yolok ha'kelev." Anyone who slurps from the water like a dog slurps, "Tatzigo so levad," you should separate them on their own. "V'chol asher yichra birkov lishtos," and anyone who bends on their knees to drink, doesn't say what to do with them, but seemingly also you should set them aside as well. So the question is, what are they each being set aside for? So up till now, the way that I've explained it is that the ones who drink like the dog, that's actually a positive thing, because they brought the water to their hands, to their mouths. And the ones who bent, that was a negative thing, that showed weakness, or that showed a familiarity with serving of Avodah Zarah. That's one approach. If you read, though, in Pasuk Vav, it describes Vayhi Mitzbar HaMelakim B'yadam Al-Piyam Shlosh Me'osif. And the number of those who slurped with their hands, that was 300 men. It doesn't describe them as Kasher Yalok Yoshono with their tongues like the dog. So there are some who understand that the first two categories in Pasuk Hey, the ones who slurped like the dog and the ones who bowed, both of those were attributes. And Pasuk Vav describes those who were to remain. That the Malakakim B'yadam Al-Piyam, the ones who drank like a mensch, they cupped water, one hand, two hands, whatever it was, they cupped the water and brought it to their mouth. Those were the ones who were mentalists. Those were the ones who were allowed to stay. However, the ones who slurped like a dog, right? That may be more of, you know, more slurping, more tongue involvement. It describes it as after Yalok Bilshono, he'll slurp with his tongue. And those who bowed and bent down to drink from the water directly, those ones were asked to leave in civility or familiarity with Avodah Zarah or weakness, whatever it was, those were the ones who were asked to leave. And then, at the end of the day, in Pasuk,
so there's two categories, some people say there's three.
Right. According to the ones that there are only two, so all the slurpers were fine, and the bowers, they were asked to leave. According to the ones that say there's three categories, if you slurped like a dog, you were asked to leave. If you bowed down, you were asked to leave. If you slurped like a mensch, you cupped the water, brought it to your mouth, and drank nicely, then like we all want our children to drink, so then you were allowed to stay.
Did you find any commentaries that echoed the thought I suggested
last week? I asked one of my colleagues, and he didn't have. I asked Rabbi Grossman, and he heard the question, and we didn't have an answer for it. The closest I can have to an answer is what you quoted to me from the Akedah, which is that it wasn't simply the bowing, but also the giving in to the desire that was also somehow indicative of someone who serves Avodah Zarah. Even though Rashi only mentions the bowing, but if you combine that with what you mentioned from the Akedah, that a person who gives in to desire is... Okay.
Like the thought I had mentioned last week was that it couldn't be that these guys were excluded for bowing down to drink, because the ancient Semitic, including Jewish, Israelite method of worship was also prostration.
So just because a person bowed, why did that show? The question was, why did that show that he was used to serving Avodah Zarah? Everybody bowed. So we didn't have a great answer, but perhaps they also, you combine it with the way that they drink and the giving into the desire and having to slurp up all the water at once, maybe a combo of those two things would explain why they were identified as Ovdei Avodah Zarah.
Maybe there were different methods of bowing?
Could be. Perhaps there were different methods.
It's
possible, certainly possible. That would be definitely an easy way out. No, it's a good suggestion. It's a good suggestion. Okay, so we got into a little bit of a complicated discussion at the end. I was confusing myself going around in circles, but the question that we wanted to address at the end of last week was that in Pasuk Gimel, if we go back to Pasuk Gimel, so Hashem commands Gidon, Kra na be'aznei ha'am, call into the ears of the nation, Lamar, saying, Niyare v'chared yasho v'itro meharagil. Whoever is afraid should return, should desert, they should leave. So, the question that we ask, which is the question of the Mishpato Zahav, is that this is a explicit commandment in the Torah. The Parsha Shoftim, it says that when you go out to war, so you should say, the Kohen should give a little chizuk, strengthen the people, and then the Shoftim, this officer, should come forward and they should say, whoever built the house and hasn't lived in it yet could return, whoever is engaged to a woman, with Mekadesh, a woman, and hasn't married her yet, could return, etc. Different people could return. And then it says, in Pasuk Ches there, the Yasu HaShotrim L'daber HaAm, they should continue to speak, the Amru, and they should say, Ni Ha'ish HaYarei V'rach HaLevav Yelech V'yasu V'veso, whoever is afraid and soft of heart should return. So it's an explicit command in the Torah that when you set out to battle, you should come forward and say whoever is afraid should return to their houses. So the question that we asked was that in Pasuk Gimel, why does Hashem have to give Gidon a new command to say whoever is afraid should return? It's an explicit command in the Torah. So we suggested one answer, and that was that, first of all, a little background is that if you look in the Mishnah in Sota, so the Mishnah tells us that it wasn't every war that you had the right to return for. It was only for a Milchemes Reshut, an optional war. But a Milchemes Tova, an obligatory war, Milchemes Mitzvah, like conquering Eretz Yisrael, for that nobody was allowed to return. It was only for the optional battles that they would say this, and that whoever was fearful, whoever built the house, etc., should return from battle. So the question is, though, what is our case? They are in Eretz Yisrael, they're threatened by the Midianim. Is this a optional war, which you have the right to return for, and seemingly would not require an extra command, because that's already commanded in the Torah? Or is this an obligatory war? So if you look in the Gemara seems to identify this case as an optional war. Because the Gemara says that v'mu'ke ovdei kochavim v'lo leisi alayu, to prevent a Jewish, a Gentile army from coming upon you, that's called an optional battle. So, what? Right, but they were already there. They were preventing an attack. So it would seem at face value that this should be considered like that, preventing.
What about the mitzvah to get rid of them?
That's a good question.
Take it out of optional, and so it
would. Right, so I don't think Midian, though, would be part of that mitzvah. Midian was, what? Was a foreign army. Maybe that might be an answer to that. So
they weren't one of the seven nations, right?
Right. So at face value, this case seems to be what we would call an optional mitzvah, which means that you're supposed to announce this an optional war, which means you're supposed to make this announcement anyways. It's a pasuk in the Torah, which again leaves us with the question, why did Gidon need a special command? However, if you look in the Rambam, the way the Lechem Mishnah understands the Rambam, so the Rambam seems to break up two different types of battles where there's a threatening army. The Rambam says that a milchemes, what's considered a milchemes mitzvah? So he says a milchemes shiva amamim, if you're battling the seven Canaanite nations, umilchemes amalek, and fighting amalek, the ezras Yisrael miyad tsar shiva aleihem, and assisting Yisrael from an attacker that's coming upon them. Now, he includes that as a milchemes chova, right? But the Gemara is very clear that limutei ovdei kochavim, to prevent Goyim from coming in, is a milchemes rishus, is an option. So is the Rambam just going straight out against the Gemara? So no, he's not. Like the Mishnah explains, I mean, he doesn't even ask this as a question. He has a different question that brings him to this point. But the Lecha Mishnah explains that the Rambam differentiates between a nation that's already attacking you, or a nation that's just threatening, it's looming, an attack that's looming, and you want to go and scare them off. He says the Gemara that said that it's optional, that's when they're just looming on the borders. You know, there's an army waiting outside, or there's a nation that's, you know, they seem to be training, they're testing missiles, etc. They're threatening. So there...
They're not on the border yet.
So that's a preemptive strike. You want to scare them off. You want to show them, you know, don't fight us. And that's what the Gemara was talking about when it called it a milchemes rishus. However, if the army's already in position, they're attacking already, so that is included in milchemes chova, an obligatory war. So here, Midian is already ready to attack. In Pasuk Lamed Gimel of the previous parak, in chapter 6, verse 33, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, it said that Kol Midian v'Amalek v'Bnei Kedem Nesu Yasov, they Midian and Amalek and B'nei Kedem, they gathered together, Vayavru, and they crossed the Yarden, Vayachnu Be'emek Yisrael, and they camped in the valley of Yisrael. They're in position to attack. So that is certainly a milchemes chova. And since it is a milchemes chova, you normally would not have this whole announcement that people can go home. You wouldn't have Orchei HaMelchama, these proceedings where you give people the option of returning. Everybody has to fight. That's why there needed to be a special command. No, this is an exception, Hashem says. I want it to be very clear that this is purely Yad Hashem. It's the hand of Hashem. I don't want them to think that it's their own strength, and therefore I'm going to whittle down this army to a tiny force and bring about the salvation in a miraculous manner. We only find an announcement about if they were fearful, but it doesn't seem that it gave the other three categories. He's asking about what if you built a house, or if you were engaged, or you planted a vineyard. We didn't see anything about that. So it would seem that, no, you weren't given that option. Now, I want to suggest... Not necessarily here, because here we're really... It depends who we're purging. We're purging the weak, or the Ovre Avera, those who transgress Avera. So, that's a... Yeah, so... That was the answer suggested by the Mishnah Sozav. I want to suggest a second answer, based on the Ramban in Parsha Sofim. Or really, it's a Yerushalmi, but one thing I didn't mentioned it last week already, but another important factor here is when the Torah says to say whoever is fearful should return, who is it talking to? Whoever's afraid should return home. Is it someone who's afraid because he is weak? Or someone who is afraid because he is a over avera, he doesn't have the merit to be saved. And that's a machlokas in the Mishnah and Sota there. And Rabbi Akiva says that it's kimashmo, it's kipshuto. It means if you're afraid, then you're afraid because you're weak, so then you could return home. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, no, it means you're afraid of the averos that are in your hand. Now, if we come back to our...
Look, if even Yaakov was afraid. My Jacob was afraid that he had lost his best property.
Yeah.
Maybe a bear. So he had a Jacob.
Okay. So the we really have to come back then to the discussion about these two different stages of downsizing. What was each downsizing? Right. The first one, Gideon says, whoever's afraid should return home. And the second one is this exercise of drinking from the water. And it's an important question: is those who were excised because of the excise because of the they were drinking from the water in however whatever manner that was that an indication that they were Ovdei Avodah Zarah, or was an indication of weakness? We mentioned there's different approaches. So if you understand that it was an indication of Avodah Zarah, then it would seem logical that the first purging was purging the weak, the physically weak. If you understand that it was a purging of the weak, then it would seem the first one, when they say whoever's afraid, that would have been whoever's afraid of their Avera. And that's what the Ralbag learns. In fact, the Ralbag says that the first group was being purged because of their Averos. Mi ayare v'racha leva, whoever's afraid should return home, just like Rabbi Yossi Aglili's opinion, that he was asking those who are afraid of their Averos should return home. And then the episode with the drinking of the water, that was purging those who were weak, those who bowed, as a sign of weakness.
Which came first?
The Yarei V'racha Leva came first. So whoever's afraid. So whatever that refers to.
There weren't that many people left.
There were not very many people left.
After the first one.
They started with 32,000. 22,000 left after the first one. Another 9,700 left after the second one.
So after the first one, they had 10,000 people before they had any of their rooms.
Yeah.
Seems like a large amount. It's a bit on a high level.
So, I mean, there is also a third approach, which is that they were both purging over Avera, but there were different levels of it. But let's leave that aside for now. I want to go now in the Ralbag's approach. That the Miyare V'racha Leva, whoever's afraid should return home, the first downsizing was asking those who were over Avera to leave. So the Yerushalmi has an interesting halacha about this. The Yerushalmi says, the Ramban brings it, that anyone who was leaving, that because either he built a house, or because he got married, or he planted a vineyard, he couldn't just say, oh yeah, you know, I planted a vineyard, I'm going home. He had to bring a proof. That's what the Yerushalmi says. And not only for those three things did he have to bring a proof, but he even had to bring a proof if he was an over Avera, the Yerushalmi says. I'm not sure what kind of proof. You know, Adam, you know, there's a concept of Ein Adam Osa Atzmo Rasha. A person doesn't make himself into Rasha. We usually, a person comes into Beis Din and says, I did such and such an Avera. We usually don't believe him. But here we're asking him to prove that he in fact has Averos in order that he could leave. That's the Yerushalmi. So I think based on that, by the way, the Yerushalmi says, or at least the Ramban says, that if you go with the approach that you're leaving because you're weak and scared, then you don't have to bring a proof, because that's why you're leaving, right? If we're saying whoever's scared, you know, can leave, then you don't have to bring a proof that you're scared in order to leave, because if you're leaving, then you're scared. But if you're leaving because of your Averos, that you would have to bring a proof. So if that's so, then maybe we can suggest that's why this situation needed an additional command. Because here we were making an exception to the rule. Normally, for a milchamas, even if this was an optional milchama, it was a milchama where you would have this declaration, whoever is afraid can leave, even if we assume that. But normally you would have to bring a proof before you left. perhaps we could suggest that's why this differed. That's why Hashem needed a specific command to Gidon that he could leave, that he should make this announcement, whoever's afraid could leave. His point was that you can leave even if you don't have a proof. What? I don't know. It's a good question. I didn't go and look up the Yerushalmi, but that's what the Ramban quotes from the Yerushalmi. Okay. There's another Yerushalmi. Moving on a little bit to a different topic here. Another halacha of war that is learned from this series of Sukkim. So, the Mishnah says in Erevin that there are four things that are permitted, that are normally forbidden. There are four things that are permitted b'machaneh. If you have a camp getting ready for battle, an army on the move, so there are four things that become permissible that were normally forbidden. The first is mivying eitzim mikol makom. The army's allowed to take wood from wherever they want. Private, public, we have to support the army. They can get wood from wherever they want. Ufiturin merechitzas yadayim. They're exempt from washing their hands. I guess for tyros, for whatever they might need to wash their hands for, they're exempt from. Umidmai. They're also allowed to eat demai, which is a suffix truma. It's truma that belongs to an Am Haaretz. We don't know, it's vegetation that belongs to an Am Haaretz. Grain, we're not sure if he separated out truma from it, so you are allowed to eat it, even though normally it's Aser Midrabanan. And the last thing is Mila Arev. You don't have to make an Eruv. By that, I assume that we mean an Eruv Tchum. Right? Normally, you're limited to traveling within 2,000 amos of your city. You can't travel 2,000 amos outside of your city. If you want to travel more than 2,000 amos, you have to make an Eruv Tchum, which is you put down a meal outside the Tchum, or at the edge of the Tchum, I should say, and that will give you, that will make that your new house, basically, and then you get an additional 2,000 amos. So, those four things, you could take wood from anywhere, they don't have to wash their hands, they could eat demai, and they don't have to make an Eruv. All those four things were putter, were exempt for a machaneh, for a traveling army. So the Yerushalmi says in Erevin, it says, Kishem shebahali chasim peturim me'arba devarim, kach b'chazirasim peturim me'arba devarim. Just like on their way to battle, they are exempt from these four things, so too on their return. Where is the proof from? Says the Yerushalmi, Rabbi Yossi bei Rabun shama lamin adah. He learned it from here. Shoftim perek zayin pasuk gimel. Pasuk says, mi yarei v'chared, whoever is frightened and trembling, yashu v'yitzvah mehara gilad. He should get up early in the morning and return. V'lama hein chozrin v'tzvira. The Gemara asks, why do they return in the morning? Mipnei hasonin, because of the enemy. What does that mean? So, one shot we discussed last week, is that they were told to get up in the morning so nobody would see them deserting, and they wouldn't be embarrassed that they were over Avera. But that's one approach. You're soundly saying they've been stoned because of the enemy. That the point is that even if Yerushalmi sees that they're told to go in the morning, even though so there's two approaches. The Karban Ha'eda, one of the main commentators on the Yerushalmi, gives two explanations as to how we see from this pasuk that they would be exempt from these four things on their return also. So he says, the first is just that you see that it's dangerous also on the return, and I guess you don't have time, or you whatever exactly these, why these things are permissible. I'm not sure if it's because of time saving or just safety issues. They seem to be more to do with, like, to be able to keep moving. So these things are permitted so that you can keep moving. And by the way, all these things I believe are derabanan. I'm not sure about the eitzim, the taking wood, but the other ones seem to be rabbinic. Washing hands, demai, which is suffix truma, and the eruv sum, that's the machlokas. But the first understanding of the proof is just that we see from this pasuk that you're just as threatened on the return, and so therefore you also have to keep moving, and therefore these things should be permissible. The second approach that he takes is that how could they leave early in the morning? Aren't they going to miss Zman Kriya Shema and Tefillah? So it must be that you're exempt from certain things. I guess he's adding those to the list. He's saying they must be you're exempt from those. That's how they could be told to return in the morning, to travel in the morning. And once you're exempt from those, it must be that there's general exemptions going on, and they could exempt them from these other things as well. Well, they've got a long way to travel.
Sure, they can just
stop and say.
Travel out of the sight of the enemy. Stop. Stop and have breakfast. Continue on. What is that?
Yes.
That doesn't necessarily.
Yes. So.
Why should it be as dangerous to.
No, this is the people who are leaving before the battle.
The call.
So that's your Shami. Just an interesting side note is that the Rambam passed in this halacha that anyone that you're exempt from these four things on your return as well, and the commentators on the Rambam are perplexed where he got this from, and they're coming up with all sorts of proof as to where he, you know, conjectures as to where the Rambam might have learned that that you're allowed to return, that you're exempt from these four things on your return from battle as well, and the commentators on the Yerushalmi, you know, they're writing on the Yerushalmi, they have the Yerushalmi in front of them, they knew the Rambam also, they bring down, you know, the Kesef Mishnah, didn't know where this halacha was from, and this commentator on the Rambam didn't know where it's from. It's right here, this is where the Rambam got it from, it's this Yerushalmi. The commentators on the Rambam must not have had, or must have forgotten, or must have missed this Yerushalmi, and therefore couldn't figure out where the Rambam learned this halacha from. But it's Paskin the halacha by the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, that just like on your way to battle you are exempt, you're allowed to take eitzim from anywhere, you can take wood from anywhere, you don't have to wash your hands, you can eat demai, and you don't have to make an eruv, so too on the return from battle, the same is true. Right, it's a little bit confusing because the wording of the Yerushalmi at first is on the return. You would assume that it means on the return, you know, when they're victorious. But, I mean, that wouldn't make so much sense, I guess. That why wouldn't you be exempt on your return? You have nowhere to go, you know? You just got to go home, but there's no threat anymore. There's nothing, no reason why you should be exempt from these things. Unless you give, like, the ambulance tether. You know the ambulance tether for Shabbos.
You go to the hospital, you can go back.
Right. Because otherwise they wouldn't be able to go in the first place.
You're going for Hatzolah.
Right. For Hatzolah, I think what's it called? Doulas have a similar hatter.
Not Baba Batin.
Right. But you have this hatter that once you're going, then you're allowed to go there in a taxi, then you're allowed to, or an ambulance, then you're allowed to come home, because otherwise you wouldn't be willing to go in the first place.
I have a question about the Eruv.
Yes.
If they're under threat of attack, which is why they're puzzled from all these things, and it's the Koach Nefer. It's the Koach Nefer. Why would they be subject to any of the halakhic traffic?
So, right. It's a good question. I guess it's hard to define exactly what's considered pikuach nefesh. In other words, if at that particular moment there's no imminent threat, then it's not necessarily pikuach nefesh. You would be expected to observe Shabbos unless there's a specific threat. But here we're talking about an army that's on the move. They're exempt. They don't have to worry about Shlom, while we wouldn't tell them, you know.
Is not imminent.
Right. It's not an imminent threat. So that's just another interesting halacha. It's always interesting to me, these, you know, we're learning Navi here, we're learning Shoftim, Gidom. You don't necessarily expect to learn and to see things that are Paskin, halacha l'maisa. So it's always interesting to me when these things pop up. Let's move on a little bit. We're going to pick up Pasuk Zion. Perek Zion, Pasuk Zion. Vayomer Hashem al Gidon, and Hashem said to Gidon, Bishlosh me'os ha'ish ha'melakaki Moshia Eschem. With the 300 men who drink, like mentioned, those who drink properly, Oshia Eschem, I will rescue you, I will save you. V'nasati es Midyan b'yadecha, and I will give Midyan over into your hand. V'chol ha'am yelchu ish l'mekomo. And the nation, all the people who were dismissed, they return to their places, to their homes. Pasuk Ches, v'yikhu es seda ha'am b'yadam, v'eish shofroseim. So those who remained, they cashed in on whatever was left behind, and they collected the seda, the food, the meals of all those who had left in their hands, the eight shofroseim, and their shofros, they had shofars, the eight kol ish Yisrael, shilach ish l'oholav, and the men of Israel were sent to their tents, the ones who were leaving, u'bishlosh me'ot ha'ish hechazik, and with the 300 men that were remaining, they strengthened themselves. And the stage is set. The camp of Midian was below them in the valley. We're going to see that these shofros are going to be used in battle. They're going to blow the shofars to frighten the Midianites. And we're also going to see that they are going to light fires, I believe it is, if I remember correctly, in jugs, vessels, pots, and I think it's Malvin maybe who says, I mean, so first of all, I think a number of Mefarshim say that, you know, when you originally go to war, you have certain people who are the shofar blasters. Not everyone has a shofar, but because so many people deserted, there were enough shofars for just the 300 men remaining, and here you had one fourth, one place, all blowing shofars, a tremendous, frightening sound. And they were also now all equipped, he says, the tzeda, the food that they collected it in these jugs. That's how they all had these jugs with which to light their fires in, as another way. We'll see it, they use that also to frighten Midian. Pasuk Tes, Vayihi b'layla, who, and it was on that night, Vayomer Elov Hashem, and Hashem said to him, Kum, get up, raid b'machane, go down to the camp, Kinesati b'yadecha, for I have handed it over into your hand. V'myorea tova reda, and if you are afraid to go down, raid ata ufura narecha el ha'machane, then you could bring someone with you. Go. You should go and hura your na'ar, your lad, the assistant, I guess, El Amachane, should go down to the camp. What? It's his name, I think. I think so. Vishamata Mayidaberu, and you should listen to what they say. listen to the what the people in the camp are saying. Ve'achar techazakne yodecha, and then you should strengthen your hand. Ve'aradza b'machane, and you should go down into the camp. Ha'yered hu Pura Naro, and he and Pura, his lad, went down. El kaseach ha'mushim asher b'machane, to the edge of the ha'mushim, of the armed ones at the that were in the camp, as in the on the border of the camp. The people are armed because they are guarding the camp. This word hamushim actually appears in Parshas Beshalach. V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eret Mitzrayim. That b'nei Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim chamushim, which means armed. The balaturim. There's actually a number of different explanations for what hamushim means, but I think the most basic approach is that it means armed. That's what it means here, that the people at the edge of the camp were armed. The Balaturim in Parshas Beshalach explains, you know why chamushim is that is a word for armed? So he says, you have a pshat?
Five.
What? Oh, five. Oh, that's good. Okay. I hear that.
In Arabic, they say, my hand is upon you.
Okay, very good. So that's good to know. The Balaturim also says that there are five types of weapons mentioned in a pasuk. I didn't write down where the pasuk is, but there's a pasuk that mentions these five weapons all in the same pasuk. Magen, Vitzina, Veroma, Chafitzim, Umakal Yad. I'm not even sure what they all are. There's a shield and a spear and arrows and some sort of bludgeoner and a tzina, which I'm not sure what that is, but there's a pasuk somewhere in Tanakh, and it mentions five types of weapons. So I guess those were like the five basic weapons. That's where the connection to the word chamushim. That's the Balaturim in Parsha Beshalach. Okay, I think we're going to hold it right.